Hey there, are you a happiness seeker? Have you survived trauma and pain? And are you ready to heal and transform? Then stay tuned in. You are listening to the Open to Happiness podcast, and I am your host, Nicoleta. Today, I will be exploring relational trauma and happiness with Jackie Bergwin-Turner, psychotherapist from England. Hello, Jackie, and very welcome to our Open to Happiness podcast.
Oh, good evening, and thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Jackie. Where shall we start? Shall we start with finding out a little bit about you? Who are you, and how is your journey in life so far?
A little bit about me, how can I say, introducing myself. I'm Jackie Bergwin-Turner. I'm a psychotherapist. I've got over 33 years experience. How I describe myself is I'm a seasonal professional. And I say that because I've got a wealth of experience in many fields in social work. And it's been over 33 years I've dedicated my life to serving people. I've been a clinical social worker for the NHS, and the forensic social worker for adult social care. So I've sort of owned my skills on providing emotional support and managing behaviour, working in the forensic field. And of course, I'm a transformational therapist. So a bit about me. Throughout my career, I've been extremely privileged to working with many diverse individuals, managers, social workers, civil servants, doctors, GPs, and also I've been like working out of hours. I've worked in the forensic team with the police. And my passion is working with women in the mid-40s who face those midlife roadblocks, you know, that we come up to that nobody prepares us for, to get that work-life balance. So I'm the CEO of Aubrey's Angels, and it's Aubrey's Angels Transforming Lives. And Aubrey is my dad, who passed away like 19 years ago. Because I've got 7 amazing children and we all live by the values of my dad. So who I am today, as I say, they say your personality is your personal reality. So this is my dad's personal reality. I like to give people skills to utilize themselves and get as much experience to actually taking control of their own lives. Because in this world, it's one thing that we can say is, we seem to be controlled. Everybody is directing us in our decisions. How many of us make our own decisions? So that's why I'm so passionate about emotional management, because I really believe it's the key to success and happiness.
Wow, fantastic. Thank you so much for this intro. It's so beautiful that part of your work has been inspired by your father. You know, this everything now is in memory of your father. And creating this beautiful platform to help others. It's absolutely great. But what happened there in your first years of life that actually prompted you to being in the service of others?
Working with people. Well, I've always been a lover of people. I've got to say, I'm passionate about people. I never liked my own company. I always liked to have people. So, what made me do this? Now, are we talking about what's actually led me to be the professional I am? Or
yes. Yeah, what made you be interested in, you know, being of service to others and healing and providing that kind of support that people need?
So, okay, then yes, why? I think it's about my experience. So basically, I've had that much experience in pain, trauma, relational trauma. How can I say? From that little age, I said I was 6 years old and I had the heartbreak of my mom actually leaving me, and she did leave a big void in my life. That was a difficult time in my life, and I found myself subject to a lot of abuse from my stepmother. It was like I'd gone from one life to a world of cruelty. They called me Cinderella. My emotions were everywhere. I've also lost my mom, and it was like she was so cruel. She was so cruel. How can I say? At 15, She actually cooked my rabbit, had a rabbit, and the rabbit was the thing that was close to me. I talked to him, blue eyes, and I'd tell him all my life story. And she actually cooked it and gave me for dinner as chicken and rice. I was devastated. And that key was the day that I left home. And throughout all those years of being with her, how can I say that I always loved people, even as a child, when everybody was out playing Kirby and all the things. I would be sitting with the old woman, knitting, darning, crocheting. That was my thing. I'd get up every morning, see what the old people want. What does anybody need from me? I was passionate about helping people. And I think that was because at such a young age, I'd felt that trauma and that loss. So I never like anybody to be alone. I'm the person that brings people together. And that, I think that was the thing that actually turned me.
Thank you so much for sharing it. And I'm really sorry that you've been through such pain. You started life almost like me, really, in adversity, in loss, in lacking. And these experiences do definitely shape us and they drive us through life. So we become a caregivers as children in a way of replacing that sense of connection that we're missing,
That's
in a way of maybe providing to others with what we didn't have. And I think this is the story for many of us being in the healing world, in the healing professions. There is always an experience back there that has started everything. Thank you so much, and I'm really sorry for this. So you're starting life in trauma and adversity. You're choosing to actually not replicate that, not do that yourself to the others,
Oh,
but
yes.
spread goodness and really support others. You become a social worker. And
Yes. Oh, yeah.
yes.
I think that's a good thing. And sometimes when you say you become a social worker and you said I started life in trauma and adversity, that's what led me to emotional management and psychology. I try to understand people because my trauma led me to focusing on learning and understanding. I was trying to understand my feelings. I had anxiety. I was living in fear, and everything seemed to be a battle. My life was just so challenging. But I always was trying to keep relationships together. And I think as a result of that, I learned to deal with negative things and turn them into a positive. I used my faith as a child of God. And I used to sing and I do mental health poetry. I write e-books, and that's about using my emotions and then using them to attract a more healthier life rather than a more unhealthy life. And I think that's where that's actually come from. Yeah.
Yes, such a wonderful story of post-traumatic growth, where you're actually becoming conscious, you're having a spiritual awakening, and you make positive choices for yourself and all of the others around. And I definitely agree that the power of prayer is so important, and the power of positivity in that good sense where you're not dismissing anything that is positive, even in times when life feels quite hard, really, to engage with. And I wonder if there's been room for happiness throughout this first stage in your life when you were struggling with some domestic abuse and a lot of hardship. What was your relationship with happiness?
Oh, that was very good because I was, how can I say, my relationship with happiness. I found it very fulfilling. My relationship happened with that's interesting. Happiness, because through all my sadness, how can I say this? Throughout all my sadness, I still found myself to be that happy child. I lived a life of pain, but that pain always gave me the gain that when my dad came in, he always came in with a smile. So I found that I was able to live a happy, meaningful life, but in a painful. I learned, I can say, I learned to equip myself with pain and to accept it. And there's a point in life where you have to learn that affects your mental health, and you can you have to focus on what you can control and what you can't control. And I think that's where the start of emotional management is, because I was a very tearful child. I always cried. I was very emotional because I knew I was quite a trauma child. There was three of us that my mum left, and I was the youngest. I was 6 years old. My brother was 7. My sister was nearly 9. So I was able to create a form of happiness because I had still had somebody to look up to, but they was weaker than me. Is that a way to say it?
Yes, they
They
were
were.
more fragile, less developed to face life.
That's right. So my relationship with happiness was different to theirs. I mean, they're still traumatized now. For me, happiness was one of them things that, because I think I was so young and we live in a visual world, I always had a dream and a deep desire to help people anyway. Do you know what I mean? And I think that passion, that childhood play is still with me now. And as I said to you, when everybody else was playing out, I would be helping people. So I found the form of happiness by relationship, by learning to build relationship with other people. It became a passion for helping others. Do you know what I mean? It made me feel so valued. It actually created my path to wanting to becoming a nurse, becoming a nurse, because I had that people's connection. Where other people had their grandparents in there, I didn't. I had other people's grandparents and parents because I hadn't got that family connection around me. So for me, it was like my life had took that turn where I always looked up to somebody else, but there was so much age difference in the people I connected to. But one thing I can say about happiness, no matter how bad the days that I was from the day my mom left, by the end of the day, I was always somebody that tried to make sense of it. And I always looked for the lesson in things, and that was what was not going to happen again. I was able to change my misfortune to a fortune. Do you know what I mean? From being lost, lonely, abandoned, confused, that child, my life turned around to make this understanding that I was the only one that could make myself happy. So even though I'd cry, I'd make a poem out of it. I'd sing a poem out of the pain, but I'd turn it to a story of gain. And that I think that's why I'm a very good psychotherapist, by using dialectic behavioral therapy, because I will face and accept the situation, but I always seem to bounce it out because it's called gratitude. So I find myself being grateful that I'm still here for an experience, and that happened from a child, and that gratitude always created an happiness in me. I always ended the day happy, even with my 7 children, no matter what, I ended happy because it was like all the bad things had happened all day, and then at the night, I was in control at the end of the day. And I'd create my own story. So I'm very creative. I used to want to work with on TV with children because I'm very creative, because I had to learn to be creative to create positivity gain from my pain. And that's why I say my misfortune became my fortune, because my misfortune was all that pain. Well, I turned it into happiness, and it was all gain, because by turn it was like understanding it and not letting it break me at that young age, that I still grow, I still evolved, I still developed, and I still respected people. So I learned that that's about a stage of happiness, because usually working with people, I found that people hold a lot of anger usually.
Oh, indeed. And what a beautiful success story with you to turn that hardship into a wonderful life experience where you're being hurt in relationships, you go through relational trauma, but you're not allowing that to make you distrust people for good. It feels like there is a force in you. There is an amazing force in you that is allowing, it's fueling you in a way. It's fueling your life. It is allowing you to continue to connect, to respond to any type of negative energy with a lot of positive vibe and openness and embracing and acceptance. And there's also a story of surrendering to what is and cannot be changed. And focusing your energy on aspects of life that are really in your control. And I even visualize the little Jackie, you know, struggling throughout the day, but then still retaining a connection with that playfulness within her. With that part of us that never dies, that never goes away, no matter what we go through, it's always there. So if you look back now and you use your intelligence and wisdom as an adult woman to reflect on this, what would you say happiness is today for you?
Well, happiness today is, it's about healing people. It's about success, is making somebody else successful. And I described it as I was, like you said, that little girl. And I remember that little girl that had to rebuild her life. I remember being that girl that had to turn my crawl into a walk. And that walk into that stand. I remember, and you know, that energy, that stand into the jump and that jump into a run. And I remember being that child, because all my life, teachers used to say to me, I love the resilience in you. I hadn't got a clue what resilience meant.
Yes.
I went to university, I love the resilience in you. I worked at the Express to start, I love the resilience in you. I never ever looked at resilience till I started working in psychotherapy and trying to be a social worker, and actually recognizing the strength is that part that unlocked the deeper part of me.
Yeah.
It was that part of understanding the emotion in me and committing to changing it. So for me, happiness is, during times of hardship, turning that pain into gain. Do you know what I mean? While going through those challenges, it's about maintaining an open mindset and realizing you are the only one that control your thoughts control your feelings create your emotions, I should say, and your emotions create you to act or react. Do you know what I mean? And it's all about the power of the mind, the power of controlling your mind. It's all about emotional management. And I say to people, happiness for me, I can tell you, it's so easy. It's like this. I am not in control of the events that happen to my life. Take coronavirus. It happened to everybody, but it happened to me. But what I was in control is, once I had a thought, that thought belonged to me, belonged to you, and it belonged to everybody. We all had a different thought, but each thought now is creating a feeling to these people, because they've put a meaning on that thought, but they're all different. Yes. And that's what I'm saying about happiness. They're all different. We're all going through the one event, but guess what? There's only one person that can make that way out. And it's about recognizing that your thoughts, you put the meaning on it. So you create the feeling on it. And once you get that feeling, you either react or you act. And what I say to people is, if you don't like the feeling, go back, revisit it, and change the meaning. And that's when I change it to a positive thought. Like, I become grateful that I know that the bailiffs are on your door, or grateful that I know that I've got a flat tire and whatever, or grateful that I know that this man was actually trying to groom me. I take the gratitude in it. Then I change the meaning, which changes the feeling. And then I don't react. I act, because it gives me control again.
Yes.
And that's how we keep our happiness. Nobody can create this for us. Our personality is our personal reality. So we can be sad. And I remember being an empath, that child, where I worked everywhere, working in a care home, working with children, my passion of people of dementia, older adults. I was like this every day. I'd go in, and if everybody was happy, I'd be happy. If they were sad, I'd be sad. And I felt like I was in and out of emotions, because I just kept connecting to people that was not me. So I was living my life through everybody else's emotion.
Yeah.
So my life was chaotic. That's why I broke for a decade, because I was all trying to always heal everybody else. But in trying to wrap everybody else, I never once stopped to look at the mess I was creating, man.
Yes, we tend to keep busy when we suffer trauma. We tend to keep, you know, distracted in the outside world to not look within. You're right.
To not look at yourself. So I could heal anybody. But once I stopped, I was the mess.
Yeah.
I was the mess. And that's when I had to start to learn to walk my talk. And I really did. And I spent Over 180,000 trying to get through, because I just walked out of work one day and I remember waking up and it was like, I always described it, I woke up one day and before I even got out of bed, I had ping pong balls bouncing around my head. And all I knew, I hadn't even touched the floor and I didn't want to be here anymore. And I remember that feeling and wanted to die that morning and going to work with that feeling and literally just breaking behind the door. And it was like walking into an office, and this is talking about happiness. I'm already broken. I'm walking into an office and, oh, it's Jackie, I've got a tribunal. Can you go through this? Oh, Jackie, I've got a safeguard. Can you go through this? And Jackie, and I remember just saying, who the hell is Jackie? And just putting my bag down and going in the toilet. And I remember I hit that door and I fell to the floor. I was just broken. I couldn't do it anymore. And I just got my bag. I just got my bag and walked back. I never answered anybody and I walked away. And I spent 6 months driving around every day, leaving like I was going to work. Spending like I was going to work. This went on for about 3 years. Everybody else thought I was still going to work, but I was spending everything I'd saved. Then what I hadn't saved. It was like the midlife crisis. I said I went and brought a new sports car, a convertible. Every day I was off to work, but it was me just going wild, doing the craziest things I would never do, spending money to keep people around me. So I know the pain of sadness and how it can affect you, where you try and buy people to stay in your life. So I'd always be the one to pay for everybody because I was the one that didn't want to go home. Just, you know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying. I remember being that person. But from being that person, what I have to say is, even though the therapy didn't fix me, the knowledge of it enabled me to fix me and fix everybody else, because I'd already got those years of psychotherapy, those years of that psychology knowledge. And when I put it to what I was learning from the outside, that's why I always call it my CLIP program, Changing Lives, Inspiring People. It changed my life and it inspired me to actually look at really me. And that's when I became happy. And that's why I'm so passionate about my program of self-love. I became happy because when I really saw who I was, that person in the mirror, I realized, why don't you treat yourself how you treat everybody else?
Yes, why don't you smile at this one? I mean, this should be the first one you give a smile every morning,
yeah.
Isn't it? What an empowering story, Jackie. I absolutely love the way you're shifting through life and you're just moving to different stages, different challenges. And finally, you have to face the truth inside of you. You have to go in there and discover your true self. And I think the happiness that you talk about is perhaps what I tend to call myself, the feeling of peacefulness, that I'm with myself, I'm connected, I'm here, I'm in conscious awareness as much as I can. And I attend myself, I'm not disconnected, because I used to be, you know, like any trauma survivors, you know, a little bit dissociated and living more out there. So that's your beautiful story. And now, obviously, how can you maybe guide people still remain not necessarily happy, but at least open to happiness, open to joy, open to the possibility of experiencing a bit more than sadness when they go through hardship?
Experiencing happiness. I think that's about people having new strategies. It's about, and that's what we do. We actually help people develop new strategies to open them to happiness and to change their hardship into pain. And it's things like practicing gratitude. One, it's about changing your mindset and focusing on the positive things in your life, no matter how small. Recognizing, once you reflect on them, focusing on what you can change in it and what you have control in it, looking at the challenge and taking the lesson from it. And this can help you bring a different form of happiness, but in your life, And then two, meaning and purpose. That's about looking at ways to find a new meaning and purpose in life, and that's changing your pain to gain and reflecting on the lesson in the situation. Do you know what I mean? In the event, looking at the lesson and using that for some form of personal growth and showing how you've grown. It's about focusing on you, realizing who you are, a bit of self-love, and find that balance in life. It's about building yourself that when you need help and reaching out for support and learning that you can reach out. And there's people out there, like three, let's say support groups, reaching out to people, knowing that there's people that cares, using support groups, Facebooks, alleviating the pain by using music, by focusing, by drawing, by art, using the creativity in it. But it's also about making energetic boundaries so that you make time to practice more self-care for yourself, where you don't let people invade your space like you used to. It's about changing the things that you used to do, changing your hobbies. I always say is when things keep going bad for me, if I walk out the door and I always go right to work and things go bad today, I just go left and everything I do is different. All the process from I get up, I change my own routine, I shift everything in my mindset because you're running on a subconscious mind and you're taking me on a play. So I take back control. I do everything different. Even from I do my exercise before I walk in the woods. I'll walk in the woods first, then do my exercise, or leave my exercise to the afternoon. I change everything. I make a shift. So where I put my focus is where my energy goes, basically. Sorry about that.
No problem. I
So
think
I make time
you
to stop.
share an amazing, tone of energy. It's absolutely beautiful how you talk about your passion and how you see life and how you see possibilities of inspiring people. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's about, and I think that's why I'm a problem solver. I always say I'm not the structured person, I'm the creative person. I'm the problem solver because I'm very optimistic. I give people up. I see things in a different way that people don't see things. And I think that's about my life. That's about leaving home at 15 and when I was homeless and at that age. I mean, at that age, I remember that I used to sleep in the woods. I used to sleep in the community centre, doors, toilets, the bell tower. But all those things are such a positive story. I take my children to that area and I tell them the story about that journey. But I tell them that journey and I've given them, because all my seven children are all professionals, as you can imagine. They're all child protection, child managers, psychologists. They're all in social care because I've fostered over 34 children. But this is because how I looked at my journey, I took it to be a creative story. So I tell them that in a, not, you could call it a comic strip, a trailer, but that journey of my story, I changed all that negativity that they wanted to cry about into positivity, into a dream like a Disney world. So now they see my journey differently, whereas they sobbed when they first saw it. I had to take them and show them the joy in this journey, how this journey had created the new me. Because if that hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't think like this, I wouldn't be like this, I wouldn't be this caring person.
Absolutely, yes.
Feeding the positivity in it, so them understanding that you can turn your pain into your gains. So my misfortune is my definitely my fortune. It really is for me.
Wow,
Really.
such a beautiful way of putting it, Jackie. So you fostered 44 children and you have seven children yourself. I wonder if you can maybe share a little bit. Based on this experience as a foster mom, and then potentially from your social work years, what is the impact of relational trauma on us, especially as children, but not only, but in general? Well, how do you see that relational trauma is actually impacting us?
Oh, I think your relationship with trauma impacts us in a very deep way. And I think as for children, and being a foster carer, like I used to focus on big families to keep them together. So some were through the system, some were privately, where I knew people had just abandoned them. That was me. Anyway, the old woman in the shoe. And I think that from a young age, that trauma becomes an imprint on your life. But in the system, the foster care system, people don't talk about the positivity. That in the old days when we foster children became our family, there was part of us. And now they try and keep them as separate families. You can't tell them you love you. I was always in trouble because they told me I spoilt them. But I never spoilt them. They owned everything that my children did. They had their own bike. They had their own skateboard. They had their own... I wouldn't go and buy their clothes from the market because I had less for uniforms. They had to go to Marks and Spencer. They had the same. I changed the name and I put my name on the end of their name at school. I made them a belonging. When they came to me, I'd change the school so they'd have a fresh start. So nobody knew your past. And I think that the importance of trauma, when you say bringing it into social work, I think that's why I love social work. And I tell myself, I am good at it because I'm emotionally connected. I'm ageless wealth in it. I've lived it, felt it, breathed it. And that's why I think that children just automatically connect to me because they don't have to tell me their pain. My intuition, I feel it, I know it. I'm a feeler thinker, so I feel people before I start thinking, whereas I used to be a thinker and create a feeling.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm a feeler, so I feel you first. I feel the pain, and that's why I think I have so much success when I'm working with challenging young people that they aren't knocked to me like Pandora's box. I don't have to poke too hard, you know what I mean? And once we get that connection, I always get that story.
Yeah,
and that's about making them look at me and see the happiness in my sadness. And sometimes I drop a bit of me in it, do you know what I mean? So that they know that, oh, I'll bounce that pain with you. To show them from that bounce, you can be me. We can go up. We can go up.
Yes.
You
know? Yes.
And that creates, so social work and trauma, if we try to do everybody as a one fit, I mean, let's face it, we're doing a system where we're saying that everybody feels the same, does the same, and everybody's just a one-fit fix. So we do a system. But for me, as a foster carer and a social worker, I work very bespoke. I hear your story, and as I start to hear it, I start to put together your package. I couldn't tell you what package I could sell you because I know nothing about you. Do you know where people say, this is my package? I can't say that. I can say what you're going to learn, but I'm not going to tell you how the package is because I fit it to your pain. It's bespoke to you. It only fits you. So when that child tells me that story, as somebody that's aged as well and lived that life, and then I put myself into being a mental health nurse and the trauma of having that in my family, and then I put my professional hat and I become the social worker, I'm already connected and understanding them.
Yes.
I'm also knowing that what you're telling me to do is not going to do anything for this child. This child's got a different trauma. This child's got a different path. So when I'm doing my case and my care plan, I tweak it with a bit of creativity in it where I have more input than I should. You know what I mean? And it's about teaching that child that, no, you're not being horrible, the power of resilience, how you can use resilience positive. That's what I do with them.
Yeah.
How you can use resilience positive and use it in a good way. And the power of saying no. Well, I show them the power of saying no in a comfortable way instead of reacting in behavior. Because once they can manage their emotions, there's many ways to say no. So that creates confidence and happiness in somebody when they haven't got that fear. They've got all these little tools. So everybody walks around with their own little bespoke toolkit.
Yes.
And when things happen, yours is different from yours. You might be both all seeing the same therapies, but every toolkit's different because everybody's happiness is different.
Absolutely.
Everybody heals different because everybody's trauma's different. And the one thing is, now what I say, because everybody's pain's different, let's stop trying to put them all in one box. Yes, we're all in darkness, but how did we get there is a total different journey. And that's how you change open happiness because let people be free in their therapy.
It sounds absolutely wonderful. The way you talk about connecting with children, the way you talk about holding them, containing them, actually talks about your own availability for them. So you're not scared to feel their feelings. In a way, you are embracing them with everything they bring. Because very often we feel quite hesitant to actually allow others to see us vulnerable. But we do that because others are not actually able to hold what we're carrying. And not everyone has the same capacity and bandwidth for emotional containment. But obviously you do. So you're embracing them with their trauma and pain, and you're just allowing them to be that and express it in the way that it makes sense to them. I absolutely love the passion that comes through you in terms of connecting with others and allowing them to be and become who they want to be. And now maybe we can shift a little bit and we move into the area of psychotherapy. How do you actually help people heal their trauma?
And this is about the first thing is healing trauma is actually recognizing you're in trauma, because through life, it's like recognizing you're in domestic violence, recognizing you're in trauma. You've come from a family where mom and dad fight and they love each other, but they stay to each other till 90 years old. And then you go into a relationship. So you believe that's what happiness is, that up and down. Do you see? So that's your vision of it. So when you look at trauma in a way that you don't understand that you're actually living in trauma, you're actually in domestic violence, you don't even try to change it. But once you do, and I remember being that person 25 years in the marriage and waking up and thinking in social work, oh, doing this course and thinking, that's my life, but I am in domestic violence. And everything they said is all about me, but I'm not in it. I didn't recognize I was in trauma. I hadn't got that was just a lovely life, and that's how you do ups and downs and you fight. And this is what I'm saying about working with kids in trauma. Once they're recognizing trauma, and that's done by you helping them find out who they are. And how do we do that? Self-love. First of all is I wrote many poems about who are you, self-love, what it does for you. How do I know who I am is a very good question. And that's about getting people to stop looking at how you treat others and how you treat yourself, how you talk to others and how you talk to yourself. And all of a sudden you'll see this deep balance, how you talk to and think about you to how you actually react to others. Once you've developed that lack of self-love, it's about teaching you about you might be a mother, you might be a manager, you might be a wife, but there's a value of love that belongs to you. And if you don't know what it's like to feel loved, nobody can make you feel loved. You will never be happy because you don't know what you feel when you're happy. So then after they've done that self-love, it's about getting them to do the CBT, the cognitive behavior, and changing their mindset. So they've started to give themselves 30 minutes in the morning, a bit of time for themselves, a bit of meditation. But then you start to tell about to change your thoughts and changing all these things that are happening bad in their life while they came to you. And every time something happens bad, you create something beautiful out of it. Every time they come to you, you create a beautiful story and you teach them to look in the mirror and reflect in the mirror that you're looking at, not the mirror that they've always been looking at. Because the same story, you're bringing a beautiful picture, and they learn by changing their mindset, owning their thoughts, that they can actually change the story. So I always say, I go from self-love, I'd CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, the mindset work, changing the mindset, waking up and making a positive day, but starting your day with gratitude. And everybody needs to learn gratitude before they're going to go anywhere. Now, gratitude, dirty attitude, I see it in my work. Place everywhere. When I've worked in the courts, I've worked in the prison, I can tell who he's going to be. I can tell that person with no gratitude, and I know what attitude I've got to work with, and I know what the kids are going to go through just because of his gratitude. Yes, no. So I teach kids and they get gratitude. So once they get gratitude, they start to earn and they can change that mindset, that positive mindset, and see goodness in not good things. See happiness in not happy things, because see, we just taught them something. Without sadness, there is no happiness. Open happiness is
Absolutely.
about embracing sadness,
Yes, it's
because
the
you
other
would never
facet
know
of
what happy.
the coin.
That's yeah. And then so once you've started them to get that mindset, now they're in the CBT, the change of mindset, Then I say DPT, and then I teach them dialectic behavioral therapy, where they dialect their negative feelings. And yes, I want you to embrace it. And I tell them, we're all angry for 14 seconds, and it's a long time when you're angry. But after 14 seconds, I'll do this. It's yesterday.
Yeah.
And if you haven't dealt with it, I have now, and I move on. I also teach the children that there might be a situation, the old group's lying, but nobody will take control of it because you can't move forward because nobody wants to own it. Be the person to own somebody's lie and say it. I'm going to be brave and own somebody else's problem because I need to move forward in my life. And if nobody takes control of it, it's not going to move. So I'm going to take control of it and move on with it. It doesn't mean you have to be the guilty person in it. You have to be the brave person in the story. And that's about dialecting your feelings, changing the meaning, changing the feeling. And once you learn to dialect your feeling, and this is what the PTSD and the trauma kids that I work with, they come with so much pain and we talk about it and we go back to the event. And first of all, we position where we, what role we played in it and what we could have done about it. And where they see that they failed in it, they realise it was the best, might not be the best decision in the world, but it was the best decision at the situation anyway. 20, 30, 40 years later, that's a self, that gives a self sense of healing.
Yeah.
And they learn to dialect that feeling because they learn to change the meaning, and then they're willing to change the meaning and create their own story out the story that's been created.
Yes.
Then I say to them, once we've done that, act, acceptance, commitment therapy, accepting that this is a role you played in it, and we all play a role in it, and that's very hard. Once you accept the situation, the role you played in it, then you commit to what part of it you was in control of it, and you commit to change it. Then the T is making the time and the task to change it. Accept and commit to your trauma. And that's how you change it. Act.
Yes.
And they all come together, but everybody's story comes in a different pattern.
Yes.
And once you accept and commit to that trauma, you only can be the best version of yourself. And I say to all of the Napoleon Hill, I say to all the kids, all divine providence, I ask for not more riches, but more wisdom to use wisely the riches I was given at birth, which every man has, the power to control and direct my own mind to any means I desire. And you start training the children's mind to accept that any means I desire, only you have the power. They just don't know it. And that's why if we worked on emotional intelligence and got these children connected to emotions earlier and putting their own meaning on anger, where they see anger in their family as punching the fist. When you work in my classroom, because I work with Cam's children, anger, they stamp their feet. They've got my attention. They don't have to throw the chair through the window. Some of them put their head on the desk and they stand on the desk. No, no, you're not happy. But we was taught that not to be happy meant to show this challenging behaviour. So we put these meaning on the children's emotions. They could put a different and deal with it differently if they were emotionally connected.
Yes, so such well said. It's beautiful that you give us a brief intro into your framework, how you work with people in psychotherapy, and the power of gratitude, the power of self-love that you talk about, and self-compassion are so important, you know, as well as obviously changing the mindset and addressing what's distorting and dysfunctional in there, which is part of the larger programming, as I suppose we will get, you know, somehow conditioned into the same world. But it's a beautiful way of moving through, understanding what happened to us, and then accepting what happened and cannot be changed, and surrendering to this. It's very, very similar to the way I work. That leads to a lot of learning and extracting meaning from the pain, from the adversity. And I feel that that's allowing people to actually forgive themselves, forgive others, make amends if they made mistakes themselves.
Yes.
And that's what's prompting, is initiating the healing and the inner transformation. This is absolutely beautiful, Jackie. We're coming towards the end of the podcast. I'd like to ask, what are your best three teachings for people that are listening and watching to live a happy and fulfilling life?
The three teachings, we always say, Right. Gratitude.
Yes.
Learning to embrace gratitude, because sometimes people don't practice gratitude because they think they've got nothing to grateful. So once they cultivate or create that mindset of gratitude and focus on the positive things in their life, the small things, the things that reflect to make them feel good, I always say that creates a change. It's about them learning to shift their perspective from a negative to a positive to create more happiness. And then two, I'd say definitely finding meaning and purpose. And it's about looking for ways in your life to experience and change a negative to a positive, to find a new look in a poisonous situation, to learn the lesson in the thing, to learn the lesson in the situation, to use that lesson to be a personal growth that develops resilience, which is good. It's about engaging in different activities like mindfulness, meditation, and helping you align and find yourself. And three, the most of all, is seek support. Seek support. There's always somebody out there understanding that everybody's going through a challenging time. It's about sharing with others how you're feeling. It's about putting yourself around people, not alone, when you're feeling in a negative place. It's about finding comfort in your pain, but actually learning that you can scream out without saying a word and shouting out. And that's about bringing your presence around other people and just letting them then they know you're here. There's empaths around that feel you, and there's people that know you. But once you get yourself in that safe environment, you can create happiness because somebody's about sharing it with you.
Thank you so much. It's some absolutely, absolutely beautiful, encouraging, empowering, educative. It's gratitude. It's finding purpose and seeking support. The support is really about healing in the community because we can do a lot of individual healing with ourselves, even
Absolutely.
in a therapeutic space. But the healing we get when we share our stories with others, you know, when we allow for that self-narrative to be changed, like you said earlier on, it's so powerful. Oh, Jackie, this is really good. Where can people find out more about you before we end today?
Right. Well, you can find out me. I'm on LinkedIn, Jackie Bergwin Turner, psychotherapist. I'm also on Facebook. I've got some links. I don't know if I sent them over to you in the email that you can put up after,
Yes.
but you can get me on LinkedIn. I do a group, and this is what I do in the community. It's called Talking is Good, and it's getting people to talk. We just come together to talk. Because when you're asking me where I'm going to share with you, I'm going to say something. Remember JF Kennedy? JF Kennedy, I always say he's somebody that I look back at, how he described happiness. And he spoke about happiness, about its importance in society. And he said he was famous for saying, every fellow man and every African, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what they can do for your country. While this quote does not directly mention happiness, it reflects on the idea that finding purpose and contributing to greater good and bringing a sense of fulfillment creates happiness. That's what I loved about Kennedy. He believed that individuals had to make a positive impact on society, and
Yeah.
by doing so, they'd create and find personal happiness and fulfillment. So that's how you can find me. You can find me on Facebook, but I want people to look back at people like JF Kennedy, why I do what I do. I
What a
want
beautiful way to end this podcast. Thank you so much, Jackie, for your wisdom, for your time, for being here with us, for sharing your stories, for feeling open to happiness, open to share yourself actually with the world, at the same time being inspirational and supportive towards all of the others listening. Many thanks.
Many thanks to you, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to share my story.
You have listened to the Open to Happiness podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, show us your love, share, subscribe, or give us a review. Thank you.